Hello, everyone. This is Dave Charest, content manager here at Constant Contact, and welcome to another edition of the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. Yahoo! Yes, we're being ridiculous today as we're drinking another round. Actually, I have to do that again.
I think we're ridiculous every day.
Yahoo bottle opener.
That's the most action Yahoo's got. Yeah.
So there you go. You've heard it here first. Again, welcome to another edition of the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. I am Dave Charest, and I'm once again joined by my esteemed colleagues, starting to my right.
I'm Azure Collier. I'm a social media education developer.
I'm Erica Ayotte. I'm our social media manager, and I'm drinking a Red Stripe.
I'm Danielle Cormier, and I'm a social media specialist, and I'm drinking a white UFO.
And banging the table. I'm Josh Mendelson. I'm drinking a Magic Hat number 9 from the great state of Vermont.
I'm Dave Gerhart. I'm also drinking a Magic Hat number 9, just like Josh.
Ooh, twinsies.
Yeah. Wow.
Cheers.
We're sitting next to each other.
And I'm drinking a Sam Summer Ale.
Nice. Oh, I forgot mine. I'm drinking a Woodchuck, which is also from Vermont.
Yeah. Hey. We've had those in a while.
So we've got a couple of news things to talk about this week, and those two things are Facebook now allows people to edit their comments, or that's at least in the process of being rolled out, because I haven't actually seen it live yet. I don't know if you guys have.
By the time you listen to this, it probably will be
and
live.
That is true. And also the great Twitter crash of 2012.
Dum, 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 dum.
So let's start with Facebook allowing people to edit comments. Cool, not cool. What do we think?
That can't be anything but awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's no downside to being able to fix the stupid thing that you said on. I mean, especially when you're making an inappropriate comment on someone else's ridiculous post. I mean, there's really no downside to being able to fix
that. Usually you would just delete that, but, like, you know, if you're a spelling or grammar stickler, we all have made the mistake of...
We've all fat-fingered.
Yep, exactly.
Their iPhone.
Does it work on mobile? I don't know.
I haven't seen it work anywhere yet.
That's where I make the most mistakes, pressing too many buttons on the iPhone.
Yeah. It can happen.
So, I mean, I guess that's a great thing. I guess you can just edit it. Yeah, I mean, whatever. I don't think either way it's the end of the world. I mean, sure, you might make a typo, make a mistake or whatever, but it's not like people are expecting you to be, like, have an editor with you.
I don't know. Some people are real, like, sticklers about it. I'm not one of those people, and I hate when people are, but, you know. Yeah. Well, now, given the option, like, if I see that I've made a mistake, now that I have the option to fix it, I think I will.
Yeah, sometimes I get my your and theirs mixed up. Like, give me a break, you know?
Yeah.
But you are stupid.
Yeah. It's part of it. It's a learning. This is how I learn.
I think those of us who do a lot of social media and are constantly typing, and you know, I think we're less sensitive to the occasional typo. But I know when someone else in your organization is looking at what you've written, they may be more critical, and you might not see it. So I think it gives you an opportunity, whether you're outsourced or you're a junior level employee.
Or outsourced.
Like two
which is why you make the job
That's why they created it.
Yeah, I mean...
And sometimes you see the typo and you post again to correct it, and that's another alert to whoever was on that conversation.
I think you can see edit history for these comments too.
That's interesting.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how this really end up really rolling this thing out, but end of the day, probably a good thing. Time will tell.
Certainly can't be a bad thing.
Yeah,
good thing,
exactly.
Minor impact.
But talking about major impact, on Thursday, Twitter was down for about 2 hours, I hear.
In the world. Stopped. And does anyone miss the fail whale?
I miss the fail whale.
We were talking about that. We were like, where the hell is the fail whale?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, when Twitter used to crash, you would
Which was all the time. In the days of yore.
Right. You would go to Twitter and this giant fail whale, a picture of a whale failing, would come up on the
screen. Carried by birds.
Twitter birds. And now it's not there. You just get a more sort of standard error message. Or you get nothing.
Well, that sounds like a hashtag. Bring back the fail wheel.
It could have been a different kind of error, though, because they only can set it up for certain months.
So,
but still.
So I think the thing that's interesting here is that no one who's not on Twitter would ever care. You know, like, I don't know that anyone, like, people were horrified yesterday in the Twitterverse, but, like, there's really no impact.
I was confused because I was like, where am I supposed to complain about Twitter not working?
Right. And I wonder if Google Plus got a spike in traffic yesterday. That would be interesting to look at.
I bet Facebook did.
Well, now you say there's not much impact there, but if you think about it, we at that time that Twitter went down, Azure and I and Dennis were trying to attend an Adobe webinar about Facebook, actually, and we were having technical difficulties trying to get into the webinar. So we wanted, they had like a hashtag set up and a handle, Twitter handle. So we wanted to go to Twitter to say, what the hell's up? Get us into this webinar.
That's a good point. But Twitter support, probably a huge problem.
Yeah.
I retract my prior statement.
And if you had any tweets set up and Hootsuite to go out, they didn't go out. You had to reset.
Yeah, it just
kind of
disappeared into the ether.
Mm. Very interesting.
I think overall, though, just because it's such a real-time thing, like, I feel like, for the time that it was down, you missed out on a lot of things, but then just picks up. And just
no, you couldn't have missed out on anything because nothing was happening.
Or, I mean, you are, but you might have wanted to put something out.
Yeah,
but like in the real world, nobody was talking about stuff, so it's like, you know, you missed out on that.
Forced people to have an actual face-to-face conversation.
Yeah. So, but there's something actually interesting that comes from this idea. So, like, you know, the great Twitter crash, something's pretty hot on social media right now, people talking about it, like us talking about it now. And there's actually, that's kind of a cool lesson to learn in terms of how you can use current events or stories that are happening that are hot to kind of give your content legs to like use it in a headline or work it into, you know, work pop culture into a topic and relate it to your industry and stuff like that. Do we have any examples of that kind of happening? Or
yeah, we did that with yesterday. We posted a funny cartoon along with the announcement that Twitter was down. It wasn't just you, and we ended up getting almost 100 shares on that post and a ton of traffic. And then we posted another cartoon after about what you do when Twitter's down, and that got another 90 shares and
that's
over
a
100
shares.
Likes for both of them. Ah. So it's a good way to sort of latch on that. And you can do that with things like the Super Bowl or the Kentucky Derby or Father's Day or anything that's going to be talked about a lot.
I've seen a lot of posts this week about the weather, the heat.
I think you just need to be careful on sensitive topics, though, where, you know, you see stories go awry where, say, something like the Jerry Sandusky trial is going on, and people try to be cute about it, and it's not cute.
Who is trying to be cute about that?
I don't know about this one, but there have been things like that where
people
try...
There's been hashtag hijacking.
Right.
I think there was Iraq elections a couple years ago, and there was a store in the UK that used those hashtags about voting to publicize their products.
Ooh, that's not cool. Yeah, I guess
didn't a designer do that with like the Arab Spring uprising?
Oh,
Is that what it
was? Right, that's
the one
I was thinking.
Possibly. No, don't do that.
Yeah, I think the key is you don't... I mean, you are taking advantage of a popular topic, but you're looking for ways to make it make sense, and you're not looking for it to be like to make it look like you're just being opportunistic.
Back to your business.
Yeah, if your stuff has really no, if you're just hijacking a thread, that's wrong, or if you're just there's no real relation between what you're talking about.
So what are some guidelines?
Nothing
political. Controversial.
Well, I mean, you can say nothing political unless, of course, you're a political business.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really just depends on what, as with anything, it depends on what the business is, right? It's going to depend on what it is that you do and how the particular news story relates to
it. It's tough to set broad guidelines. Like, we have guidelines for things that we say or don't say here that might be different from other companies. Other companies might be okay with saying certain things that we just decide to pass on. So I really think it's just... it's specific to your, individual business.
I think it's a common sense rule. You know, if you think maybe you shouldn't, and you're representing a brand that's not your own, you probably shouldn't.
If you have any hesitation while you're putting it together, it means you probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about just content in general, because, I mean, one of the things, that's interesting, I think, about just the way social media and the internet has kind of evolved is that every business owner and every business kind of has an added on
role
or job description now, which is content producer or publisher, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so...
And what do we mean that as? Just as blogging or
so it
or
could be,
social
it, it
media?
It could be anything.
Or?
I mean, it could be you're expected, if you're going to use these tools or to get an audience, really, because it's really about gaining eyeballs on social media and doing that. So you actually have to either create something, whether it be just a status update on any particular field or network, I should say, or it's actually producing blog content, newsletter content.
Multimedia,
any of that stuff.
Video, photos,
And actually curating content.
So what's the difference? So... is one better than the other? Do you need both, or
Both as in what?
A producer and a... Well, let's talk about curating content,
okay.
Actually. Like, what would you... What is curating content, and is it okay to do that?
So curating content, if nobody else wants to jump in, is when you find interesting news or things that may be of interest to your audience, and you share that with them. And you may or may not, but it's usually a good idea to make some type of comment on that particular thing.
And attribute it to either the writer or the source.
Sure. And you're basically, you're saving your audience from having to do that searching. So you're finding quality content or things that they may be interested in, and they don't have to do that.
So it's taking the internet and...
Kind of condensing it.
Condensing it, so...
And
yeah, and that's the reason there's actually quite a few successful Twitter presences out there where they don't
mm-hmm.
actually create their own content. They're just awesome curators.
Yeah.
And they just find interesting things and they gain large following just because they're,
they're known for finding cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I've actually, some people are better at it than others, but I think people, like the term curating content, like I actually don't like it because I think it sounds too complicated when all you're really doing is... It's as easy as doing a Google search and looking for terms related to your industry, for example, finding stories that people are writing and taking those links and posting them from your own presence. I think a lot of people get caught up in the process when it can be a really easy thing to do.
Though I do think because of the way that Twitter and the internets have evolved, there is an art to it because, you know, a lot of times you see people like retweeting and sharing the same information over and over, especially with, you know, marketers and marketing content. You'll see the same headlines like a million times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the best curators are the ones who can find those sources that aren't quite as popular and aren't going to get retweeted a million times over. Like, for example, I don't often tweet Mashable articles anymore because they're just all over the place. And I'm not adding to the conversation by including a retweet of it.
Right. That's an interesting point about adding to a conversation. Back to the curating content, some people have actually just, I know somebody who runs a newsletter that's within the arts world, that is basically, it's called You've Caught Mail. Caught is the guy's name, and it's
how do you spell
caught? C-O-T-T. You've Caught Mail. Indeed. And the whole thing is a digest of different articles he finds within the arts world that, you know, related topics that he's got a bunch of subscribers that actually has some pretty good reach too, and but that's all he does. He doesn't
write it himself,
or he just puts it all together. Like, he might write a little blurb about it,
and people still find it valuable,
and people find it extremely valuable.
And it's a lot less work than writing it all. So I guess the takeaway for small businesses would be, you know, it's great that if you can run your own blog or create your own content, but a lot of people either don't have the resources
mm-hmm.
or the time to do that. But you can still, there's a lot of value in curating and a lot of value in, you know, pointing your audience in the direction of things that might be of interest to them.
Yeah. So as we move on to a question here, one of the questions that we have today is, you know, when should I outsource my content creation? Any thoughts on that?
Well, if you can't do it well, if you have the money to do it, and if you think you have a plan for using the content, because you don't want to pay someone to create all this content for you if you don't have a way to use it.
And if you're able to be authentic,
right.
and make it sound like you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago on the podcast about when should you outsource your social media, and I think sort of the same rules apply. You know, if you're curating content that's clearly someone else's, I think that's fine. If you're essentially having a ghostwriter, you know, they better really understand what you're about and what you're trying to get across and what is important to you and your customers. Otherwise, it's just going to be off base. There's no value in doing that. And in fact, there could be a negative consequence because it's inconsistent with what people are really experiencing with you.
Yeah.
I mean, especially as a small business, if you're meeting a lot of your customers face-to-face and they know who you are, they're going to be able to sniff out if it's inauthentic.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's definitely something to be said. I mean, if you can find somebody who can... get to the core of what you're trying to say and put it in a format that's better. Because, I mean, let's face it, not all of us are great writers.
Right.
But we have the ideas, we know what we're talking about. And it's as simple as interviewing somebody sometimes and just putting it into a better format. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Agreed.
Yeah, no, agree.
But that's the trick. It's not having somebody write stuff for you. It's having somebody help you get your ideas on paper.
Right.
That's a great distinction.
Yeah, I think
I like
that's
that.
The idea to think about for that. So when you say when should you do it, yeah, it boils down to
do you have the money?
Right.
You know, I mean, if it's going to, I mean, I don't think, like, if it's going to put a huge strain on your business, then, you know, that's where you should probably allocate your first funds.
And I would say, I mean, do you have a strategy involved, too? I mean, you don't want to be creating content for the sake of creating content, because
that's the buzzword.
Right, yeah. So you really want to think about it, and if you're going to do it, have some type of plan in place first. And hire somebody that can help you achieve that plan rather than just somebody that can help you write stuff.
Yeah, otherwise, if you don't, the person writing for you just has no idea.
Doesn't know where to go with it either.
Reaching the goals that you want.
Exactly.
And one of the worst things is to go to somebody's website or you see their blog and you see like a post in November and then one a week later and then there's just nothing.
Right.
Clearly, you know, there wasn't enough time to write or, you know, whatever happened. So.
Yeah, it doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that, I mean, if we're going to talk about strategy, like one thing that you can do, especially if we're talking about a blog and we're talking about a website, is that if you're going to drive people to that blog, you know, make sure you have, like, your Join My Mailing List widget on your website. So if you're driving people there, they can also sign up for your email newsletter and maybe get a, you know, like a digest of your blog post. So that's, like, one way. Like, that could be one of your goals and one of your strategies that you're implementing.
Great. Danielle? Do you have a tip for us this week?
Is it time for the tip?
It's time.
Time for the tip.
All right. Well, today's tip is about email marketing, and we always talk about how to be human with your Facebook posts and your Twitter tweets and everything, but you should also try to be human within your emails, too. So try to inject your personality in all of your emails, crack a joke, reference a hot topic in the news, like we were saying with social media, and just show your customers the real you and that you have an opinion and that you are a real person and not just an automated email.
Great. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.